4 and 5, and I'd like to introduce you.
Hi, everybody. My name is Yulia. I'm an addict.
Hi, Yulia.
Oh, God. I don't know. I kind of want to see people. I don't want to see
myself.
Yeah, please. Anyway, the truth is that I really love small meetings because they're intimate, and then I don't feel the pressure to perform and the pressure to do the best meeting ever, because the truth is it's not about me and it's not about the meeting. It truly is the experience of the fourth step. And so just like they say, the lie is dead, we can recover. Like, the lie is dead. The fourth step is not scary. The fourth step is nothing. It's just another step in the order of steps, right? And I do believe that steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 is the biggest gift that I can give myself in some self-discovery and in dealing with myself and people around me. That doesn't mean that, I become this constant spiritual human being who does the next right thing. Like, I'm still a person that fights with my husband and calls my sponsor 3 times a week at least to talk about the same thing, right? Because there are just some things that are really... My old sponsor used to say to me, we all have our things, right? We all have those things that will never, ever go away entirely, but we do get better with them over time. And so I just have to accept that that's just one of my things, and not use that as an excuse to be an asshole to my husband, but just to give myself some grace so that I don't put myself in a hole where I'm constantly badgering myself over being an asshole to him. And so obviously before coming to the step 4, we have to do 1, 2, and 3. They are in order for a reason, and the reason is that because people have this idea that the step is so scary, it is not, right? It's so important to realize that it's not at all. I just have to gain an understanding. There's a power greater than myself working in my life that once I'm faced with fear and guilt and shame and sex and abuse and feelings, right, all those things that are make me feel uncomfortable, make me want to kind of crawl out of my skin, I just have to get ready to, like, kind of face that. So some people think that that's scary, and I think that's the greatest gift I've been able to give myself. And so the truth is that I have worked the fourth step twice, and I had an immense privilege to work a fourth step with a sponsee. And that is an experience to have somebody trust me that much that they would share their fourth step with me. It's just such a gift as well, right? But some steps have more impact on me than others. And really, the fourth step had an impact, but not as much of an impact as some of the later steps for this addict. Because I can share with you that, like, I was sitting there thinking to myself, did I share with people that I had an affair with a married person when I had a year clean? Like, I can share that, but it really doesn't have as much impact on me today as it did when it was happening, when I had a year clean, when I had 2 years clean, 3, 4, when I was living. And, you know, my sponsor asked me, do you feel any guilt or shame over it? And I would say no to her, because that became my normal. Just like the needle became the normal, just like snorting became the new normal, right? That's why, to me, like, things like non-alcoholic beer is not acceptable, because if I drink a non-alcoholic beer, then a real beer might become acceptable. If I don't go to meetings regularly, if I don't talk to my sponsor regularly, if I don't do some kind of service in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, if I'm far removed, right, if I'm not in the middle, if I'm 1 foot in, 1 foot out, the non-alcoholic beer then becomes alcoholic beer. I don't have the experience. I have seen the experience, right? So I don't know why I said all that. Must have been a reason. maybe I needed to hear it. That's the truth. So let me address the fifth step, right? Because the fifth step is, for me, it was having a sponsor that I trusted to tell some of the things that I was so embarrassed by, mind you, it was not having affairs with married men. It was these other things that now are so insignificant. But to have another person, to trust that other person, to have a bonding experience with that person, the one person that believed in me, right, and my recovery. And one of the things I did read like that, I answered one of my questions with like a paper over my face because I was just so embarrassed by it. But to have a person, you know, that got my understanding, I'm still building a relationship with, okay? And that's just the truth. I pray regularly. I meditate 30% of the time. But the relationship, I feel for me, is going to be just a journey. That's what I think. For this addict, I think it's going to be a journey. Because when I think about it, I think that because for so much of my life, I lived with the anticipation of the other shoe dropping, it's really hard for me to have faith in something greater than myself because still of that same fear of the other shoe dropping. And so I have the desire, like I've seen in my own life, things that kind of have happened to me throughout the entirety of my life, right? In active addiction and clean. That it is undeniable that the God of my understanding is constantly working in my life through anything. There is still that fear of I can't get too excited just yet, right? And that's one of the questions actually in the fourth step is which feeling am I most afraid to feel or uncomfortable to feel or something like that. And for me, it's the feeling of excitement. And I'll never forget it. I was like 11 years old and I allowed myself to be excited to go to my friend's birthday party because my father was a drunk. And I was just like afraid to have any good time because that shit always got ruined by him coming home drunk and wanting to kill me or wanting to kill my mom or chasing my mom with a knife. And here I'm chasing after him. And I'm like, I will never forget the feeling of allowing myself to feel excited to go to my friend's birthday party. And sure enough, it was 7:30 p.m. and my mom called and said, get home. And ever since, I live with this other feeling of waiting for the other shoe to drop. And let me just share this with you. I'm a person who's unable to have kids biologically. Like, it was a whole thing. I found out I couldn't have kids. My best friend was pregnant. One of my close friends was pregnant at the time. I was planning her baby shower. And to get those news was extremely devastating. And I had my sponsor, right, talk about having trust. And I had my sponsor. And my sponsor and I went to the doctor's appointment for no other reason than I don't even remember what happened at the appointment, just for her to be able to ask some questions that I was unable to verbalize, because I don't even know what planet I was on. I was just crying, and I could not stop crying. And let me tell you, not using through that is really, really, because I have this muscle right now, just for today, of keep coming back, right? Like when we work out, we build the muscle, right? And we have the muscle memory, and that's what I had, the muscle memory of continuing to come back to meetings and seeing my friend at the baby shower walk down, and I'm crying, and I want to be happy for her, but the truth is I'm not, because I know that that's a feeling that I'm never going to be able to feel, and yet God made it happen. Like, I have a two-year-old, and I was able to carry her, and I was able to do all the things, right? Through signs. And so anyway, and yet there's still that in those moments of fear, there is still waiting for the other shoe to drop, right? But the most important thing I can say about the fourth step really is giving myself the gift of writing and giving myself of being really honest and not writing short answers. Mm-hmm. Lord, not writing short answers. And it's interesting, when I go over a step with a sponsee, like I never tell him, dude, do you want to just like maybe sit, digest the question, write on it, just really see what God will do. Like, I don't say that. Because what happens ultimately is I will share my experience with a step and I'll bring out my step work and my sponsee will say, wait, you write that much? I'm like, yeah, that's kind of what we're supposed to be doing here. It's not the surface. It just is not the surface because I will be the same person, right? I know that my first, fourth step, my second, fourth step, like God will only give me what I'm supposed to, like, be dealing with that moment. Maybe not the heaviest stuff just yet. Maybe not. Maybe it is supposed to be the surface stuff the first time around. But if I give myself an opportunity to continue to come back to meetings and truly continue to work on myself and be a different person, because it's not really about the substance, right? Like, it is not really about the substance. It's just about the behavior. And if I do another fourth step, maybe that step will be deeper, but yet not deep enough to know, hey, why are you still living with the waiting for the other shoe to drop? Maybe it doesn't happen now, but I know that if I continue to come back, if I continue to write, if I continue to call my sponsor 3 times a week, really, guys, we just bullshit around most of the time. We do. But if I do that, one day it will click. So my biggest resentment was my dad, right? Susie just shared about her experience, and we bonded a lot over that over the years. And so my biggest resentment was my dad, because he was so fucking abusive, and he still is emotionally. Tonight he sends me this text, guys, and then he unsends it. I'm like, how the fuck did you even learn to do that? He's 75 years old. He barely knows how to use his cell phone. He knows how to Facebook and share posts, but he doesn't know how to, he knows how to unsend messages, right? Like, he got mad at me, I guess, because I didn't read it in time or whatever. And so, anyway, I have this resentment with him because I was always afraid of him and my sister as well. And that is one that I never thought would go away, truly. Like, I just really resented my dad because I could not understand how someone can treat their own child like that. Like, I just could not understand that. Like, I didn't do anything. I'm this little child who's trying to, whatever, live her best life, go to a 10-year-old's birthday party, you know? Anyway, I was reading a book. It was outside literature, and it was probably about 6 months ago, maybe 8 months ago, and I'm reading this literature, and I was really thinking about and meditating over my little girl, right, who's playing around. She's doing what she's doing. She's going to be 2 next month, so she was a year old, and tears just start pouring down my face because I just could never think to do that to her. Like, I could never think to myself that I'd be able to pick up a chair and throw it at her or hit her with a hot iron, right? Like, go and hit her with a hot iron or pull her hair, or, like, he would choke my mom out a lot. Anyway, and I couldn't, and then I had this, as I'm thinking about it, I had this epiphany that, like, it's really made me sad for him, that is all he had to offer. That was his coping mechanism. He didn't know what to do with himself so much that was his go-to. I have a sister, like, he just abused us, you know? And then I just got really sad for him, and the resentment kind of lifted. Because I could see him. And the truth is, I still want to resent him. I want to hate him. But it's just is not there anymore. I'm really sad for him. That is how he chose to spend his fatherhood, was being an abusive man. And he may not have chosen. That is what he saw, right? We talk about generational. And that is just what he knew to do. And I'm like, damn. I threw it in the space a few years ago. Because he's like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. He was such a pillar of the community. And, oh, he's such a nice guy. He's very, like, soft-spoken. I'm very loud. He's, like, so spoken. You have to, like, get up close to hear him. But yet he was such a monster when he would get home, you know. And I wonder to myself now, so I threw it in his face, does he even think about that ever? That, like, he's 75, and he spent majority of his life torturing his family members. That's a fucking sad existence right there. But also, that is a gift of my step work. I don't know about anybody else's step work. my step work, that not only do I take the time and I write it out, not only do I talk about it with my sponsor, but I'm able to sit there and hear her. And let me tell you, when I call my sponsor and I tell her about my husband, she does not talk to me back about my husband. She talks to me about me, no matter what he did. So I really, the biggest gift any one of us can give ourselves is that when everybody's telling us about ourselves, that we do not think, what does this bitch think she's doing? No. For me, I have to take a look at that. Because if I've chosen a person to sponsor me, to lead me through the steps, to guide me, she has to be seeing something that I'm not. And if I'm entrusted with her, that's kind of what I have to do, is follow through in that. So the fourth step just is what it is. It's another number between 1 and 12. And I just have to continue to work on it, and I have to continue to write on it a day at a time. So thanks for letting me share.
Next up, I'd like to introduce Danny.
Hello everyone, I'm an addict named Danny.
Hi Danny.
We late, bring us up some.
Got it, man.
Thank you. Whoa.
Right there. Cool.
Again, hello everyone, I'm an addict named Danny.
Hi.
And I'm grateful to be here and be here clean and in any meeting of Narcotics Anonymous anywhere. Thank you for your share. I appreciate that. First, I want to tell you a little bit about who I am and where I come from. Like I said, I'm an addict. I'm going to be 74 years old, but I look 34, right?
Yeah.
My clean date is 9/16/1987, so I have 36 years clean. And I'm a Vietnam veteran.
Thank you.
And if anyone out here is a veteran, thank you for your service. And the reason why I mention that I'm a Vietnam veteran, because that was a big issue, it still is, in my recovery. And that kept me loaded, got me loaded, kept me loaded for many years, you know. I'm a Marine. I got out in 1970, that's 54 years ago, and I still have post-traumatic stress. I used to say I suffer from PTSD. Today I don't suffer from it. I have it, and I deal with it, and I learned that because of these 12 steps and the recovering addict and you guys. So what I want to kind of talk about real quick, I only have 20 minutes, so you know, I'm going to have to kind of go fast, but I want to share with you guys some of the freedom that these 12 steps, especially the fourth and the fifth, have given me with the issue of Vietnam. Now, everybody in here has their Vietnam, man, whatever. They've got some kind of trauma that has got them loaded and kept them loaded. So everyone has their Vietnam. This was one of my main things, so that's why I want to talk about that, the healing process. And excuse me, I had all my teeth pulled for implants, so it's kind of hard to talk with a list, so bear with me. I'm kind of cute, but no cheese. Anyways, so before I can talk about the fourth and fifth step, I have to talk about 1, 2, and 3, because I had to surrender to the disease and admit I'm an addict before I could start, you know, getting on to the other steps. Because like you said, they're in order for a reason. You got to do 1, 2, and 3 before you get to 4. And when I got out of Vietnam, I was full of PTSD and hate and resentment. Especially for the United States government, because I told you how old I am, so I'm a child of the 60s. In the 60s, there's a man right there. The 60s are sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And while all the people that I went to high school are all going to college and partying and having fun, I'm going to Vietnam. And so I was angry. And being over there, I got more angry, and I was so resentful. So I got back, strung out on heroin, wanting to recapture the 60s, so I became a heroin addict, and I moved to Sanford to Haight-Ashbury. So that's where the, you know. From then on, it was a disaster. You know, the addiction, as you know, how it progresses, it progressed, and it got worse and worse and worse and worse. So anyways, I had to do a first step. When I finally did a first step, which proved to me that I was an addict, then I had to come to believe, you know. And when I finally came to believe, then I had to, you know, figure out how I'm going to turn my will and my life over to this higher power so I can do an inventory. And I learned the inventory process from my sponsor real early. And I got real confused when they showed me these 12 steps and 12 traditions, because I looked up on the wall and I see these. I said, these are 12 sentences. How are 12 sentences going to keep me clean? They're just words. Well, that's what a sponsor will show you how to do that. What's a sponsor? Well, a sponsor will teach you how to do that. So I got this sponsor, a Vietnam veteran, and I went to him and we started working on, he want me to write this inventory, the fourth step. Ooh, the fourth step. Ooh, how could I tell you all about me? You know, how could I tell you all the things? I didn't give a shit who knew who I robbed or what I did. And I had resentments for everyone because it was your fault, not mine. I was an addict because of you. If you just leave me alone, or if I had the right girlfriend and a red Corvette, I'd be fine. You know? And I learned that from these inventories. So I wrote a first step inventory, which proved that I was an addict. And proved to me that I was an addict. I came out of the womb as an addict. And I don't have enough time to explain how I really came to that, but it proved to me because I wrote that inventory. And let me tell you guys, for me, there's magic in the pen and paper, man. Because you can deny shit all day long, but you write it and put it on paper and read it back and read it to another addict, you can't deny it no more. It's real. You know? So I wrote that first step and it shows that. So then I came where I was so sick and I was like, for my first couple of years clean, I wore sunglasses. I was from Arizona. And I wore sunglasses day and night because I was so afraid if you looked me in the eye that you would, you know, see what a scumbag I was. Because I had so much guilt and shame from shit I did in Vietnam. You know, and then I'm also going to talk about the eighth and ninth step, too, once I did a four-step inventory, because really, because I did that inventory and shared with another addict, I got to make amends in the eighth and ninth step, which gave me the most freedom I ever had in my life. Step nine. I know this is a 4 to 5, but I got to mention that. You know, so I went to the sponsor. We wrote this, and I had no problem telling him who I hated and who I was resentful for, and I told him the shit I did in Vietnam and what I was so ashamed of. And one of the biggest things that had haunted me for years and many years clean into recovery, 20-something years into recovery, is I had to kill children. How do you kill a 10-year-old man and live with that? I mean, he had killed me. He would have killed, and he killed more people that I was with. So, but I was a soldier, and I had to do that. So that haunted me, and haunted me. So we went to, you know, wrote that inventory, and then we had a chance. I'm living in Arizona, so then we had a chance to come to Washington, D.C., and go to that wall. So me and Jeff T., we're another Marine, he's passed away, my sponsor, and anyways, we went to that wall, and we did our business, and I made my amends, and we did what we had to do there, and I got freedom, a lot of freedom from that. Just, you know, one of the most healing things I ever did. Now, my family, I retired in Arizona 2 years ago, and I moved to D.C. because my family's here, so that's why I want to be my last years. I want to be here with my family. So I had been coming to Washington, D.C. for the last 20 years, 2-3 times a year, because I have a special needs son who couldn't come to Arizona by himself. Thank you. So I've been coming here, and every time I try to go to that wall, I couldn't get across Connecticut, Constitution Avenue. I could get on it, but I couldn't. I just couldn't do it, man. So finally, Jeff took me, and we did our business. And like I said, that was one of my most healing things, you know. So let's fast forward. I told you I got clean in 87. So and I did that in 1988. I did that inventory at the wall and got a lot of healing. Then I went to Baltimore, Maryland, 1993, the World Convention. I don't know if anyone was there. Okay. Great convention. And I was with my grand sponsor, and I said, come on, Chuck, I want to go down to Washington and go to the ball, you know. And he goes, nah, you know, he wanted to chase girls. He was big. He didn't want to go. So I said, no, I don't go by myself. So I got on the MARC train, went down, I got on, so I went to the wall, and I went up to the wall, and I went up to those names on there, and, like, I was trying to force myself to feel something. I didn't feel the same thing that I felt in 1988 when I did that stuff. I didn't feel, you know. And I kept trying to make, you ever tried to make yourself cry and try to push a feel? I couldn't do it. And it made, what's wrong with you, man? That guy's died for you. What is wrong with you? Why can't you do this? And I was just really depressed. I got back on the train, went back to Baltimore, and I said, Chuck, and told him what happened. And he goes, Danny, don't you understand? You did that inventory and you shared that with Jeff, and you're okay with that now. The healing. And that showed me right there, and I'm getting chills again. And that was 1993. It showed me that the healing process of these 12 steps, what it can do. What it can do, man. And, like, it just amazed me. So After that, I never had any problem going to the wall. And so every time I'd come to visit my family, 2-3 times a year, first thing, I'd go to the wall. I wanted to take my daughter and my son and my brother and sister-in-law. I wanted them to come and share and understand what I went through. And again, like I'm saying, everybody in here has their Vietnam, man. Whether you're molested as a kid or you were talking how your father abused you, that's the stuff that keeps us high, man. That's why I stick, because I couldn't, when I came home, I was so full of PTSD and fear and anger and resentment that the only thing that would turn it off was shooting heroin, man. Until it stopped turning it off. And then what the fuck are you going to do? A lot of people, do you know that there's more veterans have committed suicide than been killed in action in Afghanistan and Iraq combined? Think about that for a minute. You know? And if I didn't have drugs in Vietnam, I never would have survived. So anyways, everyone's come to me, and then this beautiful day today, I had the most beautiful day. I came with my sponsor's wife. She came from Arizona. I picked her up here, and her two sponsees surprised her, one from Canada and one from Seattle, flew in here and surprised her, and I took them. They wanted to go to the wall with me. So today we went and got to share with them. And again, and they were asking me, well, how do you feel? I felt fine. I didn't feel weird at all. I was just grateful that I got to share the gifts that these 12 steps have given me. What freedom, man. And all you got to do is put the pen to the paper and share it with another addict. That's all you got to do. When you think about it, this program is really simple. It's not simple to do because I always get in my way. And that principle, spiritual principle, is surrender. You've got to surrender. What's it say in our literature? You must abstain in order to recover. And if you don't abstain, how are you going to stop? And when I used, I couldn't stop, even when I wanted to. No matter what I did, I could not stop. And I know everyone in here relates to what I'm saying when I say, tell you that. Could not stop. You know, so now so I went to 1993 and I've been going to the wall, and today I got this beautiful day with my friends. They were crying. I wasn't. You know, so they feel the feelings, you know, and so now I want to talk about how the gift of doing an inventory and sharing it with a sponsor, step 5, got me step 8. Remember I talked about I had to kill children, I was so full of shame, so I get to my 8th step, and I put on that list of children of Vietnam. So I go to my sponsor, all messed up, Billy, how do I make amends? These children are on my list. How do I make amends? They're dead children. And he goes, this is how we're going to do it. This is how we are going to do it. And he said, we. He didn't say how I was going to do it. He said, how we are going to do it. I said, all right, how are we going to do it? So, well, we're going to find an orphan of Vietnam, and we're going to get a guy, a kid, a baby, you know, and we're going to send money, take care of that child. So for the last 18 years, every month, I send money to an orphanage in Vietnam. And they send me back emails of pictures of these little teen kids. And there's one was holding up the sign, thank you, Daniel Cole, for your generosity. Because of you, we have clean water. So what I'm getting at is there's nothing you cannot heal here. If you apply this loving higher power, pen in the paper, magic, man, magic. It just magic explodes from the paper. It has for me. And all I can share with you guys is my experience. So I send that money the 6th of every month right out of my bank account. Don't even notice it. And, you know, and I'm. That's how you make amends to dead children. So if you think you can't make amends to other, you know, people that are gone or you need to, you can. With the help, therapeutic value of one addict helping another without parallel. You know, these 12 steps, you know, are magic, like I said. And always what gets in my way is I get in my way. I refuse for that surrender. Like I said, I retired 3 years ago and I moved to Arizona, I said, I don't want to be by the beach. So I moved to Virginia Beach. And somehow in my head, I calculated that it was shorter from Virginia Beach to D.C. than it was. But it wasn't. It's 200 miles and it took hours. And then I had to go on I-95. Oh, my God, you know. So my daughter said, Dad, just move up here. Then you can be with us all the time, you know. So I moved up to Washington, D.C. And I've been having trouble connecting with a fellowship. Mm. It isn't your guys' fault. It's mine. Because I don't surrender and do that. So what I've been taught from day one in recovery, I had a sponsor that said, you will be of service to NA or I won't sponsor you. So I said, well, you got to get involved in an HNI or some kind of service to the fellowship. So I got an H&I commitment, and I do an H&I commitment every Thursday. Not every third Thursday, but every second Thursday of every month. And you know what? I get more out of that meeting than the addicts in there. And it's a down and dirty detox. It's not a Betty Ford, man. It's a hardcore dope fiends, you know. And I love that. I love doing that. I look forward to that. And I can't believe how good I feel. And, you know, and then, I mean, real quick, how many we got time left? Mm-hmm. So when we were in Arizona, this was about, man, this is about 8 years ago. Man, maybe 10 years ago. Anyways, we're in Arizona, and there was two friends of mine that were Vietnam veterans, and they'd never been to the wall. So me and Jeff, my sponsors, decided to bring them to D.C., so we came to D.C. and we took them to the wall, and they got to do their stuff and start the healing process. I mean, you have to. What I have to do is I have to learn how to surrender. What stops me from surrender is my projection of fear, you know, because I can't see the other end. What's going to happen to me when I got clean? I thought, what am I going to do, clean, man? You know, what the hell am I going to do? You know, because for me, using was a job. It was a 24/7 full-time job. It wasn't just a recreational thing, you know. And then when I got to Virginia Beach, I got a job in a treatment center for veterans only, and I got to work with veterans. Again, I got more out of that than they did. And that was all came to me because I first surrendered and I wrote the very first inventory on step one that proved I was an addict. Then I got to two and, you know, came to believe. I got to, and then finally I turned my will over, you know. And I'll tell you how I came to believe. My very first, 5 minutes? My very first Narcotics Anonymous meeting was in Oakland, California, 1972. I didn't go to that meeting to get clean. I went to that meeting because there was a methadone clinic, and they said if you go into the meeting, the doctor will write you a prescription for a new detox drug called Darvon-N back then. That's what they used. I said, so that's why I went. I didn't want to get clean. I didn't care about getting clean, and no one even was clean. I was full blown. So that's why I went there. But there was one thing that I remembered in that meeting. Somebody raised their hand, had 90 days clean. Now, I don't know why I remember that. I didn't remember anything else. Now, fast forward 1983, 11 years later, Phoenix, Arizona. I'm dope sick. I'm with a guy. He's got $50. He's going to go to this meeting, and then we're going to go across the street from the NA meeting to the Windsor Hotel. And every city in the United States has a Windsor Hotel. Even if it's a population of 50, it's got a Windsor Hotel. So I went to that meeting. He had to get his court card signed, and then he was going to go to the wedding, and he was going to give me a loan. He had the money. That was the longest NA. They wouldn't sign the card until the meeting. That was the longest NA meeting I ever been. So we finally went, did our business. What did I remember one thing out of that meeting. Somebody raised their hand, had 90 days clean. I believe that is the seed that was, the recovery seed that was planted in me first in 1972, then in 1983, because it gave me this much of the spiritual principle, this much hope that maybe if I apply this 12 steps in this program, maybe I can get clean. I didn't know anybody to get clean. Everyone I ran with were dope fiends. They didn't, criminal dope fiends. And so then when I finally, I like to tell you, I got clean right after 1983, but he didn't. I got clean in 1987, and the way that I really came to believe, I was always been pushed into recovery. I never said, I'm going to stop using and go to NA. I was, every bridge was burned, and every situation that I had to go into detox, and that was my life, in and out of VA hospitals, detoxes, halfway houses, that was my life, and loaded. So anyways, I'm going to, we used to call them in Arizona, a bandominium. Probably, So I go to the shooting gallery, and I'm going to score, and I go in and score, and I come out. And as I'm coming out, the DEA, they're all rushing to raid this house, right? Well, I didn't have any drugs on me. I had a paraphernalia, so I threw it in the bushes. And I knew that if they're going to arrest me 24 hours, then I'll be out, because I don't have nothing, and I'm not in the house. So they threw me down, kicked the shit out of me, and the DE agent said, you think you got away, but I'm going to fix you right now. So what he did is he took me inside the house, and everyone was tied with zip ties, mostly all Mexican nationals, and he told them in English and in Spanish that I'm the one who brought them to the house. So I said to him, you know what, you just signed my death warrant. He looked me straight in the eye and said to me, that's good, because that's where all you stinking junkies need to be, is dead. And I wish I could see that DEA right now and thank him, because he saved my life. Because I immediately went right into the VA hospital, because my using days in Phoenix, they were over. Because if I went on the street, I ran as a cinch, And I went right to step. This time, I wanted to stay clean. And I listened to people. And I started doing it. Getting a sponsor, 12 steps. Well, they're ascensus. What do you mean? I mean, how are you going to get me clean? They'll show you. And the sponsor showed me. And then it brought me all this freedom that I've got. And I wish I had 10 hours to stand up here and tell you the freedom that I have got from these 12 steps. Not just 4 and 5. All of them. And what I'm hoping I can do now is I got to get more connected with you guys. 36 years clean, I am not where I couldn't get loaded again, man. And the way it happens is you stop going to meetings, you stop calling your sponsor, you stop doing all the little things it's supposed to do to keep us here. So I'm making a commitment. You guys can call me on it next time you see me. I'm making a commitment to all of you right now, to you for sure, that I'm going to start getting more connected in the Rock Creek area in D.C. where I'm from. So I can stay clean and I can come back to Baltimore next year for this convention.
That's right.
So the last thing I want to say, it's been a privilege to share my experience, strength, and hope. And the last thing I want to say is to those who keep coming to our meetings regularly, stay clean. Thank you.
All right. I'd like to thank Danny and Yulia for a great...